Welcome to Legend Lore with Luis and Lauren, where we talk about Pathfinder 2nd Edition.
I'm Luis, and I'm a developer at Paizo working on the Pathfinder Lost Omens lines. I've been playing tabletop RPGs for over 15 years, written for dozens of Pathfinder products, and I also write the Monstrous Physique blog here on the No Direction Network.
And I'm Lauren, and I've been playing RPGs for almost 20 years, and I write the Bend the Knee blog here on No Direction. You can also watch me play in the Adventures, Stellar, Fall of Plaguestone, and Three Ring Adventure podcasts. And this week, we're talking about wizards.
Now, before we get started, we want to say that even though we know a lot about what we're talking about when it comes to Pathfinder, we want to remind you that we don't have any kind of official answers. We're here to offer advice, and you can use that however you like. Remember that the official word from Paizo is the only official ruling out there. But don't forget, it's your game. Do what works best for your table.
So, wizards are just another branch on the broad tree that is spellcasters in Pathfinder. And if each branch of this tree has its own niche, the wizard's niche would be that they can learn magic from years of careful study. In Pathfinder, the wizard can learn as many arcane spells as they come across, and they choose which ones they want to prepare at the start of the day. In the real world, I kind of feel like this is similar to our doctors, our scientists, our experts, people who study hard in their chosen field and have forgotten more than we will ever know. Because a medical doctor knows a lot about medicine, and they've forgotten so much, but they can pick up their medical texts about some diseases they've forgotten. They can refresh their memory about it, especially if a patient calls them and says, "Hey, I'm going to come in with bird leg itis." Doctor can pick up their book and they can prepare to know about bird leg itis for that day. And this is how I see a wizard choosing their spells in the morning. They say, we're going to assault this fortress. I want a spell to help us get in easier. I want a spell to help us deal with threats inside. So this way, the wizard kind of refreshes their memory about that spell, and then they're ready to go.
Bird leg itis, huh? Is that common in Alabama nowadays?
That, you know, it's just, it's everywhere. It's everywhere.
Jeez. So in Pathfinder, wizards represent the ultimate versatility that there is, at least regarding spellcasters. Other spellcasters usually have the ability to pick up specific spells and do really cool niche things with them, but only with that small assortment of spells. Wizards, like you mentioned, can ready themselves on any given day for whatever they need and have access to, in theory, pretty much every spell out there at any time of the day.
If it's arcane, right?
If it's arcane, yes. So if the spellbook is full enough, a wizard is ready for anything. But it does require a wizard to have found all of these spells, added them to their spellbook, and be able to plan in advance. But in theory, the wizard is prepared for anything as long as they have some time to plan for that.
Now, the wizard is surprisingly one of our most mainstream pop culture classes. Everybody knows The Boy Who Lived, but even before J.K. Rowling, Merlin was already a household name. You've seen him in countless different iterations and different forms, books and movies have him everywhere. And everybody loves Gandalf for many of the same reasons. All right, Luis. But Batman, is he an example of a wizard?
Oh boy, if ever there was some class that Batman was like, I would say it is the wizard. For you see, Batman tends to be prepared for most any situation that he finds himself in, much like a wizard can be prepared for any situation they find themselves in. Batman has studied so many martial arts techniques, medicine, science, and all this other stuff. He knows how to treat the bird leg itis, and he can prepare for anything. And a lot of the modern Batman comics portray him as someone who just has something ready to go. If there is some enemy that's using some ancient technique that no one has seen in 1,000 years. Batman actually has studied that technique and knows how to stop it because he's prepared. He has
because he's Batman.
He's Batman. He has things on his utility belt for any given situation. You know, he has explosives to break through walls. He has bat shark repellent to get sharks off of his leg. Things like that. Batman is prepared for most anything, just like a wizard can be prepared for most anything.
But what do wizards do in Pathfinder 2nd Edition specifically?
In Pathfinder 2nd Edition, wizards are arcane spellcasters. They prepare their spells every day from their spellbook, which we'll talk about in a bit, and just kind of plan the spells that they want to use for the day. A lot of the times wizards might have a go-to set of spells that they use every day, but then swap in things as needed, or a wizard might decide to select their spells on every given day from scratch, just based on how they feel and what they expect to come up in the day. And in combat, they use these spells as necessary. Sometimes they'll use them to control the battlefield with spells like Wall of Fire and things like that, or they'll use it to enhance their enemies, or excuse me, enhance their allies, or debuff their enemies, or just blow people up with fireballs and lightning bolts.
Just for being a wizard, you're already going to start with a boost in intelligence. You're going to have 6 hit points plus your constitution modifier, which is a lot higher than it used to be back when you were on a D4 plus your constitution. So that's pretty good. You're trained in not much. You're trained in like simple weapons. You're trained in unarmored. Trained in perception, fortitude, reflex. You get to be an expert in will saves, though, because all those long nights of studying really pay off.
But there are two things that wizards excel at. They begin trained in Arcana, and they're trained in a number of additional skills equal to 2 plus their intelligence modifier. And if you're a typical wizard, you're likely going to have a high intelligence score. Which means you're getting a lot of skills right out of the gate. And in addition to that, you are trained in your arcane spell attacks and spell DC. So you're good with spells compared to being fine with something like a crossbow. So the very first thing that you get beyond your initial proficiencies is arcane spell casting. You are a wizard. You can cast spells. It is the most critical part of the class. You have the ability to cast a spell, which is something that you need to cast a spell in 2nd edition. Without that activity, you literally can't cast spells. After that, you get the spellbook, the wizard's spellbook, which records all of the spells that you know. And from this spellbook, you will be preparing all of your spells every morning, or I guess whenever your whatever time of day it is when you complete your daily preparations. And this will keep a record of every spell that you find, the ones that you earn as you level up, other ones that you add in from scrolls or from wizard spellbooks that you find throughout the world. And arcane spellcasting also grants you your cantrips and the ability to heighten spells, plus your first few starting spells.
As a wizard, you're also going to get access to some special thing that you can draw just a little bit of magic out of when you need it, called your arcane bond. So as a free action, you can expend the power in your bonded item. This gives you the ability to just cast one spell that you prepared today that you already cast, getting extra little juice out of something that you need. You also are going to get access to an arcane thesis. You have 4 options here, and these are just kind of little flavor things that give you a little boost that you might use. You could take improved familiar attunement to have a familiar that's just a little bit stronger. You can have metamagical experimentation, so you're a little bit better at tweaking your spells to do just what you need.
Spell blending lets you use up some of your other spell slots to give you back a spell slot. Basically, when you're preparing your spells at the start of the day, you can trade out 2 of a spell slot, like let's say a 3rd level slot, for an extra bonus slot of a higher level. Up to 2 levels higher on that. So if you wanted a 5th level spell and wanted to use that several times a day, more than your normal spell allotment would have, In a fifth level slot, you could trade out something like two of your third level or two of your fourth level slots to get extra slots like this. And you can do this for each spell level and give yourself a bunch of extra spell slots in the beginning of the day and have extra spells for the higher level stuff, which becomes pretty useful at high levels when there's a lot of low level spells that you don't really care so much about anymore, so you can use up your first level and second level and third level slots to get you extra stuff. And finally, the other arcane thesis provided in the core rulebook is spell substitution. At any point, you can spend 10 minutes to empty out one of your unused prepared slots and prepare a different spell in that slot. This is keying into that idea of versatility. Whenever you realize, oh, actually, I don't need Fireball prepared at this very moment, we can use that to get something like invisibility or swap in, depending on the slot, you know, a higher level spell, a higher or lower level spell, and kind of be ready for anything and change on the fly, assuming you have 10 minutes to work with.
When you pick a wizard, you also get the option to pick a specialty spell of schools that you can call your own. So you're not just a wizard, you're an evoker, or an illusionist, or a necromancer. And what picking one of these is going to do is it's going to give you one extra spell that you know in your spellbook from that school, and it's going to give you access to that school's focus spell, which, as we know, focus spells are very useful since you can use them just about every 10 minutes. Infinite spells, almost. Or, conversely, you can take Universalist Wizard, which personally is my favorite in this edition because it's a lot stronger than it used to be. You can now use bonded item or drain bonded item for every level of spell that you can cast. So you literally just get one extra cast at every level. And on top of that, you get an extra wizard class feat, any one of your choice, and you add one spell, one level, one spell of your choice to your spell book at character creation.
Yeah, Universalist, getting, in theory, 11 drain bonded item uses a day is really amazing. It just, you could, in theory, just use all of your spells via drain bonded item for the day and be fine for a normal day of adventuring. After you're picking all of that stuff at first level, it's a lot actually, as you continue your career, you're going to see a lot of other improvements. You're going to see, of course, your skill increases and your saving throws increase in proficiency rank. There's a few other ones that we want to point out here. At 7th level, you gain the expert spellcaster class feature, which says your proficiency rank for arcane spell attack rolls and spell DCs increases to expert, so it's harder to save against your spells and you have an easier time hitting enemies with your spell attacks.
After expert spellcaster, master spellcaster raises your DCs and spell attack rolls to master at 15th level, and at 19th level you get Arch Wizard Spellcraft. You command the most potent arcane magic and can cast a single 10th level spell slot. Also at 19th level, you get Legendary Spellcaster, and your proficiency with spell attack rolls and spell DCs increase to Legendary.
Legendary Wizard. No other wizards can out-wizard you at that point.
The wizardiest wizard. And then, as usual, we have two very different builds prepared for you today. Luis, I'm really excited to hear what yours is. Why don't you go first?
Okay. I am being very silly with mine, but I think this has the potential to have a lot of fun, which is really what you want in this game, without also ruining the game for everyone else because you're goofing around a lot. I'm making a battle mage, but not in the traditional sense that you might expect. Not something like a Magus where you fight and also cast spells and stuff like that. This is still all about magic, no focusing on strength or dexterity or anything like that. But you're a wizard that walks around with a great axe. And what you do is you choose the Universalist Wizard You become a universalist wizard, so you have the option to drain bonded item and all that cool stuff that comes with it. I'm choosing the spell substitution thesis, just so outside of using this axe, you're ready for most anything. But the core of this build begins at level 1 with a little feat called Hand of the Apprentice. The Hand of the Apprentice feat is one that only universalist wizards can take. It grants you a focus spell, which is the Hand of the Apprentice focus spell. It grants you a focus pool, so you can use that. And let me tell you what Hand of the Apprentice does. Hand of the Apprentice specifically says that as one action, it's a somatic action to cast, in a range of 500 feet, you target one creature and you hurl a held melee weapon, let's say a great axe that you're holding, against the target. And because you're using the power of Hand of the Apprentice to hurl this great axe, you use your spell attack roll rather than something like your strength or your dexterity to determine your attack.
Wow.
So you are very smart and you know, all of these suckers swinging axes or throwing daggers and stuff, they're dummies. Just use magic to swing an axe. And you hurl an axe 500 feet. And if you hit, you deal the normal damage that the axe would do and replace your intelligence or your spellcasting ability modifier. It specifically calls out in place of your strength modifier. So if you have an 18 intelligence, it's just like if you had an 18 strength and you deal the full damage plus the 4 extra from your intelligence bonus. And then on a hit, deal that damage on a crit, it doubles as normal, and then the axe flies back to your hand immediately, whether or not you hit. So that is the core of the build, is flinging axes around and hitting people. But here's the fun part. You're a wizard, so you can make yourself even better at throwing axes than anyone else out there, because there is a second one action casting spell out there that you can combine with this to just chef's kiss, make it a brilliant attack every time you swing or throw it via Hand of the Apprentice. It's called True Strike.
Oh, I was hoping you were going to go down the True Strike road.
True Strike requires one action to cast. It's a verbal component spell. And what it says is that your next attack roll, you roll twice and use a better result and ignore things like circumstance penalties due to being concealed or hidden. So enemies that are hiding behind barrels and stuff, it doesn't matter. The axe knows where to find them. With True Strike, you roll twice, you take the better action, you're using your spell attack roll, you're using all of your amazing intelligence bonuses on this, and very likely, you're getting critical hits when you're doing this.
Can we coin that, by the way? Legend lore, the axe knows.
So, that's the basics of it. You are a wizard who preps True Strike in pretty much every spell slot for the most part. You might do 2 per spell level. So at first level, you get 3 slots. Prep 2 of those is True Strike. Prep 2 of your 3 second level. Prep 2 of your 3 third level. And so on. So you have a bunch of True Strikes all day. When you're running out of True Strikes, you use Drain Bonded Item to get your True Strikes back. And just every combat between combat, you'll hopefully have a chance to refocus and gain your focus point back to keep using Hand of the Apprentice. So that's fun. I think that sounds like a good time, and I hope you do too. Let's talk about what else you can do with that. At second level, I'm going to take the Cantrip Expansion feat, just because it gives you a little more versatility. You are going to run out of your focus points. You only have one per combat at the beginning, so you're going to want to rely on things like your cantrips and other spells to help you out. At fourth level, we're going to take Bespell Weapon, which as a free action, once per turn when you cast something that's not a cantrip, let's say True Strike, you get to add additional damage to the spell that you're casting, or to a weapon that you're wielding. Excuse me. So, cast True Strike. It's a divination spell. You add an extra d6 of mental damage to your great attack. Your great axe attacks. So immediately after when you use Hand of the Apprentice, it's doing an extra d6 of damage along with the full axe damage. At 6th level, you're kind of free to take what you like. You can take a familiar if you want to give you cool stuff. It's really up to you. That's a kind of a free slot for your feet. At 8th level, we're going to take Universal Versatility, which, as a prerequisite, requires Hand of the Apprentice. A good job there. It lets you, during your daily preparations, choose one of the 8 school spells that you gain for being a specialist wizard. So if you're an abjurer or a conjurer or whatever, you get that particular focus spell from that specialty. And you can use that into your next daily preparations. When you refocus, you can change that out, which is leaning into that versatility. But the big thing is that it also increases the number of focus points in your pool by 1. So now you can use your Hand of the Apprentice a lot more. And finally, at 10th level, we're going to take Bond Conservation, which says if you just use bonded item, you can use this action to give yourself a free use of bonded item next round, or drain bonded item next round, so you can keep getting spells back like your True Strike to throw your axe all over the place and support your axe throwing ways.
Now here's an idea you could do. Since you've got a free one at 6th, if you traded Cantrip Expansion for one of the other spellcasting class archetypes, and then you took the basic spellcasting at 6th, you'd have 1 more free True Strike per day on top of all the other benefits.
Yes.
And technically, Cantrip Expansion gives you what? 2 more cantrips? Basic that's already going to give you 2 cantrips. So that's a win-win.
There you go. Even better.
Now, you say that your Battle Mage is silly, but I unintentionally went a little silly with mine. See, my first thought was I would like to build a Conjurer for this because I really like summoning. I wish summoning was better, but I think it's a lot of fun. And this devolved into something just silly. Just silly. So my character today that I present to you, Luis, is Ren, the friendly goblin gutter wizard, who grew up in the streets as an urchin, hiding from people who looked down on her and bullied her for being a goblin. She had no friends and had to steal to get by. But on one hungry night, when she was trying to steal food and she couldn't get any, she had to eat so the stuff that she did steal, some stolen scrolls. And she found that the taste of magic was delightful. By eating more and more scrolls that she could steal, she eventually learned the different flavor components that went into these spells. And by concentrating on these flavor profiles, she slowly learned how to harness the magic, and she grew addicted to eating. Instead of a regular spell book, she's going to keep a picture book where she just draws pictures of the emotions that these different spells inspire in her when she eats them. Because, as you know, a goblin can't read. It would steal your thoughts, and nobody wants that. So, but she never had any friends either, so her only friend is a rat that she sometimes gave scraps to, and they had an unshakable bond. But now, by the power of eating scrolls, she can summon as many magical friends as she likes to keep her company or protect her from the bullies. So my character is Ren. She is an iron gut goblin with City Scavenger. She's a conjuration wizard with improved familiar attunement, which is that rat who is her only friend. And at every level, or at every even level, I'm going to take a rogue archetype to represent how she kind of grew up in the gutters and had to steal to get by. So at 2nd level, we're going rogue dedication. 4th, we're taking sneak attacker. At 6th, which surprised me in how useful this is, we're using basic trickery to get access to mobility from the rogue. And I had forgotten at how useful it would be for a wizard to just say, I'm going to walk away from this fighter and not take an attack of opportunity. That's what we're going to do. We're also going to take at 8th level advanced trickery, and we're going to gain magical trickster so that we can sneak attack when we cast any attack spells that we do if the target happens to be flat-footed. And finally, to round it out at 10th level, we're going to go with Uncanny Dodge from the rogue so that we don't have to worry about being flanked. Now, City Scavenger and Very Sneaky, because of her past, are going to help her do the things that she has been doing from her backstory. cave climber and combat climber from climbing around on buildings, helps her climb to the top floor of a building to get those top shelf scrolls. All of her skill feats are going to be stealth and thievery related things. Her bread and butter spells are going to be the ones that can summon friends, like summon animals or summon elementals. Going to be ones that help her get out of trouble, like Long Strider, or avoid being caught, like invisibility. Or the ones that help her fuel her magical addiction by stealing more scrolls. So, Mage Hand's going to be another big one, too, because she can just kind of reach in the window, grab a scroll, pull it out, eat it to learn that new spell. That's how she learns her spells. She eats them. It's a little silly, but I think it could be a lot of fun.
I really like just the flavor of eating a scroll and learning the magic that way.
Yeah, it makes no sense, but it feels like how a goblin wizard would be. That's what we have conjured up for you today about the wizard. But what questions have you conjured up from us? Let's take a look. Let me do my daily preparations and find, from patron Dungeon Novice, is Harry Potter a wizard or a sorcerer?
Well, Harry Potter wasn't built in Pathfinder, so Harry Potter uses completely different rules. And according to his setting, he is a wizard. But I think he is more akin to a sorcerer in Pathfinder than he would be a wizard. There's no spell books. The kids in the Harry Potter series do learn spells and are taught magic, much like a wizard would learn it. But in terms of needing to prepare spells or anything, there's not anything like that. It's just a kind of spontaneously coming out of them when they use their magic words and the wand. So I would say Harry Potter is more like a sorcerer, and the Hogwarts teaching them is kind of the physical way we can represent their learning their spells and adding them to their repertoires as they grow.
I'm glad you went down the sorcerer path, because I don't agree with you. And this lets us have a cool discussion. See, the Harry Potter kids go to school where they learn spells from books, you know, and in the movies, in the books, you see them cast what, like 6 spells or something. They know more spells than that. There's 100 more spells that they've been taught that you don't ever see them cast because they didn't prepare it that day. I guarantee you that Hermione knows spells that she can't cast up just at a will, but maybe if she needed them, she'd study up in the morning, prepare it, and then go out there and use the somatic component that is flipping the wand, you know?
But think about this. So we're teaching the kids Wingardium Leviosa today, right? They've never used this spell. They don't have it before, so they, in a sense, don't have it in their spell book, right?
Well,
follow along with me here?
No, I don't, because the class is them learning to prepare it in the spell book. Or like the teachers have like a special feat that allows the students to do it with instruction.
Ah, well, then that's something different. But I was going to say, if they're just showing up and learning a spell for the first time, they haven't had it in their spell book, so they couldn't have prepared it that morning. And, someone says, here's how you do Wingardium Leviosa. And, you know, that's them learning it right then and there and adding it to their repertoire rather than adding it to a quote-unquote spell book and then taking another 10 minutes immediately after being told to study it. Oh, but that 10 minutes might be them, they're practicing and preparation.
That's right. And on top of that, even if they were sorcerers being told, we're going to learn this spell today, how is it that all of those sorcerers had already had this spell put into their blood, you know? These are wizards.
I don't know. I think we could go either way, and we'll let our listeners decide. We've put our arguments forth, and you can decide at home. Maybe Harry Potter is actually an Arcanist and is stuck in 1E rules.
On No Directions Facebook or Discord, please leave a comment. Let us know if you think the Harry Potter kids are wizards or sorcerers. From user Brian Lane, how do you explain to newer players the process/rules of preparing spells? In particular, how do you explain the concept of preparing multiple copies of the same spell?
This is always difficult, I feel. I think I have to end up explaining it 3 or 4 different times, and I have yet to find a good analogy for it. Other than maybe consider each spell a bullet that you put into your gun, into your wizard gun, and you can you have a whole assortment of ammunition. You know, you have true strike bullets and magic missile bullets and fly bullets and stuff like that, and you can bring with you however many you like of each given bullet, and that is you preparing the spells, and once you use the spell, the bullet is fired off and it's gone.
I think that's a pretty good way to explain the rules of preparing the spells, but how do you explain the concept of preparing spells to new players?
Boy, that is something deeply rooted in the history of this game, going all the way back to Jack Vance, and the way it worked in the fiction is a wizard would read and prepare into their brain like 99% of the casting of the spell, and the last 1% is them doing the somatic and verbal components. And somehow it gets wiped out of your brain when that happens, which is, again, weird. It's hard to explain, and I don't know if there's... The fiction of it has never been my favorite, so... I think
I've got a good one for this. It's the same. The wizard knows 100 spells, but at the start of the day, they can prepare 6 of them. But they maybe don't remember 100 spells. So they pull up their spell book. They kind of refresh themselves. Oh, I'm going to need magic missile today. Let me go study the different incantations and metamagical properties behind the spell. So then at a moment's notice, they can take that preparation that they just did, that little refresher course, and they can move. Now get this, okay? This is what I think. They can magically move the knowledge that they just gave themselves, became reacquainted with, into the physical world in the form of that spell. Boom. That's why they no longer remember it, because they took that memory that they just created and they used it to do D4 plus 1 damage.
Hmm. So that knowledge powers and is the spell in the real world.
Knowledge is power, literally, for the wizard. And on top of that, when you're explaining the concept of preparing multiple copies of a single spell, you just study extra hard. You're not just going to remember the gist of Magic Missile. You're going to remember all of Magic Missile. You're going to remember all of the physical underlying arcane properties that allow that spell to happen in the real world. But I wouldn't say this stuff to a new player, because they're going to be like mind blown.
Yeah. So our next question here is from our patron, Gina B, who asks, why would you want to play a wizard over an arcane sorcerer?
Well, it's about options. It's about versatility. It's about the philosophy that a handful of spells isn't going to solve every problem for you. The sorcerer is a hammer seeking nails. The wizard is a toolbox. That's really the difference. So whereas a sorcerer is going to take the ones that they think will be the best all the time, I'm going to take Featherfall in case somebody falls sometime in my life. I'm going to take Fireball because I'm always going to need area of effect damage. The wizard says, all right, listen, I know we're going to be fighting on the cliff tops. I know there's a possibility we're going to fall. I'm going to take Featherfall today. Tomorrow, we're in the castle. We're in a dungeon. Nobody's going to be falling. Instead of taking Featherfall, I'm going to prepare Magic Missile. That's the strength of the wizard, is that you can tailor your spell selection to the mission.
Yeah, I've always heard that a wizard can plan for a day in advance for their spells, but a sorcerer has to plan years in advance with their spell repertoire. So it's just having that ability to change on the fly. Oh, also, sorcerer doesn't get Hand of the Apprentice, so they can't throw battle axes across the battlefield. So, I mean, there you go.
That's true. And while sorcerers can use metamagic to kind of make their spells a little bit more versatile, so they work in more situations, the wizard has more options for meta magic, and they even have a whole meta magic arcane thesis. So their spell selection is already more mutable, and then meta magic makes it even more mutable. The wizard has what you need. So another one from patron Jaina B. What are the defining aspects of being a wizard besides just being a prepared arcane caster?
I think the big thing is the arcane school. There are no equivalents to abjurers and necromancers that are specifically focusing on those schools of magic among the other spellcasters, even the other arcane spellcasters. So being able to fully focus on illusion magic, get extra stuff for just illusion magic, is just a wizard only thing. No one else can really dive deep into that. You can be a sorcerer who prepares a bunch of illusion spells and has a lot of illusion stuff, but you're not going to get the specialty that comes with being an illusionist.
I think we've already hit on a lot of the other defining aspects of being a wizard, is just that you are utility made manifest. Whatever is needed is what you have. You have the ability to prepare spells to help with that. You have the arcane bond to help with that. You have metamagic to help with that. You have your entire class feat list is things that help you be utility, that help you do what is needed if you can prepare first, like Batman. So, have we conjured up enough information for you today? Was this a successful cast of Legend Lore? Because that's all we have for you. Make sure to check out the rest of our content on the No Direction Network. If you like this show or any of our other blogs or shows, please consider supporting us on Patreon at patreon.com/nodirection, because it's the support of all the patrons that make this possible.
Until next time, I'm Luis.
And I'm Lauren.
Thanks for listening to Legend Lore. And as always, it's been legendary.